This is the DRF Players Podcast.
What's up? Friday, March 20th, DRF Players Podcast, alongside Peter Thomas Fornital, Mike Hogan, I'm Matt Bernier. Fellas, it's Friday. We got a busy weekend. We got a short show. We've got a little bit of an interview in here. Let's start off with a little bit of news. Unfortunate news, the passing of the chief, Alan Jerkins.
Yeah, I mean, this is just a great loss for racing. And even though he lived a great long life, and even though I'd known he'd been hospitalized, it still comes as such a shock. I didn't know Mr. Jerkins personally, but just by one degree of separation, I see how many lives, both human and equine, he touched and made better, and that the world is a much worse place without him. There's some nice stuff on DRF about him already. I enjoyed what Jay Hovde wrote. Dave Grenning did a great job covering it, and there's some more stuff up there as well. Also very curious how a couple of my favorite of non-DRF writers are going to end up writing about Alan Jerkins, just because I know they were close, writers who I know were close to him. I'm thinking specifically of my friends Sean Clancy and Teresa Gennaro, both of whom I assume will have a lot to say and may be good places for people to remember the great Alan Jerkins, who will be sorely missed.
Yeah, and I didn't know him personally. I only knew him as a race fan and as a horse player, but he was always somebody that, you know, I almost kind of thought of as larger than life, almost a giant of the game in a lot of ways. And it's just, even up until, you know, earlier this year, you know, he was still having winners. He was still putting out horses. He was still, you know,
even a few weeks ago, I feel like like he had a couple of winners in the last couple of horses that ran in his name. Yeah. I mean, and I love one thing I love about him is, you know, the giant killer is obviously that's going to be in the first paragraph of any obit about him. Right. But I like the idea that he didn't like to define himself that way. He liked the chief nickname. And he was just such a good old school horseman who wanted it to, didn't want it to be about him and didn't want it to be about, you know, knocking off these other horses. He wanted it to be about the attention he paid to each and every horse in his barn. It's just a great attitude.
Yeah, and obviously, you know, being rather, in the grand scheme of things, new to the game, I've only known past big things, although I do remember Emma's Encore, which is his last Grade One winner.
Yep.
She was, you know, obviously writing only a couple of years ago, a handful of years ago, but you mentioned it. In the beginning of any sort of obituary or whatever it may be, they're going to obviously talk about his, I would argue, Dan and I talked about in DRF Live, the fact that the Triple Crown winning champion trainer, wasn't the champion trainer, Lucien Lauren, didn't win 73. Alan Jerkins did, because he took down Secretary
twice.
Two different times
with
two different horses. So, you know, I mean, that's always going to be, you said it, in the grand scheme of things, he's you know, done much greater things than train horses. Everything I've read from people and what people have talked about, that he was just a giant of a man.
Touched a lot of lives.
Right, and he always looked out for people. But as far as strictly from the game side, you know, I mean, arguably two of the most impressive feats that have ever happened.
Yeah.
You know, so obviously disappointing. You know, thoughts and prayers out to the family. Obviously, Jimmy Jerkins, I believe, you know, his son Steve,
yep,
and everyone else. So, a sad story, but lived a long life.
A life to be celebrated.
Had a very good career, and his legacy will long live on
immortal
in years to come. That's right. Yeah. So, the passing of Alan Jerkins. Not the easiest transition point, but the game goes on, and I think he would want the game to go on.
Of course.
Obviously. We've got some big races this weekend. Let's start off first, though. Do you have any tournament updates with what's going on this weekend?
Yeah, well,
offhand?
Absolutely. We've got a couple of these credit-building contests coming up this weekend on drfqualify.com, where players can put up $50 and play for a share of up to $10,000, depending on participation, and these can be used in the entire DRF family of contests. And maybe of particular interest to folks will be that coming up in the next few weeks, we're going to be running qualifiers for the rescheduled Gulfstream contest in September, and also
fingers crossed, no
hurricane season. Yeah, and then we've got the Santa Anita Bay contest as well.
Beautiful.
And then also, this is the other bug I'm putting in contest players' ears about this weekend, is you know how much I love the two-stage qualifying format on BC Qualify, where you have to finish in the top 10%, essentially, of each round to get your $10,000 BCBC seat. Well, your last chance to participate in the two-stage until August.
Woo!
Long time out.
Saratoga.
is happening this Saturday. So contest players should probably look at both those things. Then Sunday, NHC Tour returns to NHCQualify.com. So should we go to the audio tape here for a minute?
Yeah, let's do it. You get a little interview.
Absolutely. This is Steve Wells, the guy, great guy, and he won the Santa Anita Betting Challenge. There's an article on the site right now from earlier in the week of me sitting down to speak with him, but we got some extra stuff in this interview that we're going to go to right now. I'm here with Steve Wells, the winner of the March Santa Anita Betting Challenge. Steve, thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, no problem, Pete.
Well, I got to ask first and foremost about the contest over the weekend. We talked a little bit about it in real time, but for the listeners here on the podcast who missed the article, tell us about your big successes that enabled you to win this tournament. I know there was something on Saturday and there was something on Sunday.
Yeah, on Saturday, I was playing it kind of close to the vest. I think a lot of players do, unless they really like something to where you're still alive going in that second day. And I think it was the fourth race at Santa Anita's, three-year-olds and up. And the three-year-old ended up being one of the favorites. And I had some win money on the horse that won at 4-1, and then the horse that was second. And it was one of those few times that the photo actually went my way. And had a nice $100 exacta, which got me $1,700 there. And then that put me up to where I was going to be somewhere involved. Right about then, I was around 4,000 or so. Hit a couple other races for a little bit here and there, and fortunate enough for me, that got me to 5,400, which was enough for the first day lead and an extra $5,000.
Now, were you playing specifically for the day money at any point on the day, or is it just a happy byproduct?
After I hit that race in the fourth race, and then I think there were three races left before I looked at the leaderboard, and there were about three or four of us that were right at the 4,000 mark, and then that's when I decided on Warren's Bonita that I ended up playing a $100 win bet, and that got me up to over, I think at that time that got me to 5,600. And then I had a decent lead, I think by just over $600-700, and I was fortunate enough to that hung on. I knew that. I mean, it's nice to win that $5,000, but also I know that I'm pretty sure everybody else still has the major goal of sticking around for day two and having a chance at those two Breeders' Cup Challenge spots. You know, the spots for the NHC. So I wasn't too surprised it hung on. You know, it just kind of depends on what the other handicappers, if it's something that you really like. And you're playing against that type of opponents. You know, that it's not a $3,500 entry fee. Isn't something that people are just out just for a normal weekend. They're out to win, and when they really like a horse, most of the time that's what happens.
Yeah, they'll go all in. They're not afraid. You said 100 on Warren's Veneta. Did you mean 1,000?
No, yeah, I had 1,000 on Warren's Veneta.
Yeah, I figured as much. So going into day two, what was your attitude? It was a tight pack. It wasn't sometimes the day one leader. It's a significant advantage. But as you point out, with so many players willing to push all in and having decent bankrolls, what was your thought process at that point?
I really didn't like the early part of the crowd. I did make a small mistake in the second race because there was a horse that was 37-1 that got second. And in that race there, I didn't like the favorite at 6-5, and I missed the trifecta. So I had lost a little bit of money in the early part of the day, but I knew at the end that I really liked quite a few horses in the last three races of the day. So I knew that really what I wanted to do was just tread water, see how the rest of the field was doing, getting to those last four, three races, and then from there would decide on how big a wagers I needed to make in order to still win the tournament.
And what was the key race of those last three for you?
The key was the feature race, the Santa Ana, which I had bet $1,000. At that time, another player had made a nice big score, and I think it was race five.
David Nance.
And that jumped him over $9,000 ahead of me. So then I just started doing the math. Okay, what am I going to do? And I was, Santa Anita was nice enough. I got to go down into the paddock for that feature race. And standing right there looking at all the horses, and I knew that Hoop de Color was the horse I was going to like. And he was 12-1 morning line, but while I was down in the paddock, he actually opened up at 7-1. So right then I started doing the math. Okay, I'm at $4,100 right now. I'm $10,000 behind.
You needed a drift. You needed a little drift in the price on Hoop of Color. And when she went up over 10-1, you knew you had a chance to get there in one fell swoop, I imagine.
Yeah, when I went up and made my bet, she had drifted up to 9-1. And there, that was when the horses come out of the walking ring onto the track. And then by the time I got to my seat to where I was ready for the race, about five or six, I just, every tick it seemed, or every other tick, she seemed to drift up, another point. And when they loaded in the gate, she was at 11. And then by the time once they hit the wire and the static that she got there first, I mean, she had just an absolute dream trip.
A dream trip, and then suddenly you were in the dream position on day two of the tournament, and you managed to survive those prices coming in the last race and hang on. Now, you qualified for the tournament on drfqualified.com, so you started off with $80 invested in this tournament, and what did you end up with in the end? What did you do the tally with what everything's worth to you?
I think what it ended up being... with a $10,000 entry for the Breeders' Cup, it's just over $53,000. And then, there's not an actual dollar figure on the NHC tournament, with the rooms. And, you take the Breeders' Cup whenever you go there. They take care of your rooms and stuff and some travel money. So I think if you add it all up, I'm probably figuring it was probably about $57,000. $56,000 total in cash and prizes.
Not too bad for an $80 buy-in. I assume we'll be seeing your name a bunch more on drfqualified.com going forward?
Oh, yeah. Yep, I'll be playing every week. And I honestly, I almost wish the Keeneland tournament was this weekend. I'm just so excited and want to just keep handicapping.
When you're hot, you're hot. Talk about your experience in tournaments a little bit. What have been your biggest successes before this one?
My biggest success before this was last year. I won at Canterbury in their tournament last September, which was, I think it was a $650 buy-in with 250 of your entry going to prize money and 400 you bet with. And I got that up to, I think it was like $2,700 that weekend, and which that got me a spot in the NHC and a Breeders' Cup Challenge. So I've been fortunate since I just started playing. And I played in a couple of tournaments, I'd say back in 2006-07, that were live money at Hollywood and Santa Anita. But before I started playing last September, that was the first time where I started playing in tournaments, and the first time I qualified for the NHC. And once I did that, then I knew I had to start honing my game and playing in a lot more tournaments. So whenever you get curveballs or something that comes at you, you can hopefully adjust and keep yourself in the game to try to win the big prize.
Are you as comfortable in the Mythical Money format, like the NHC, like drfqualified.com, as you are in the live bankroll?
I've been getting better. I do prefer the live bankroll because I I don't have any problem or any reservations about when I really like a horse, if I need to go all in or make a big bet, that, you know, I just look at it as a contest, and a contest that I want to win, so I do what I have to do to try to win.
That's a very sensible approach. Before I let you go, let me know a little bit about your handicapping process. What type of a handicapper are you? How would you describe yourself?
Handicapping-wise, most of the time I'm looking for just the winner of a race. I mostly play pick sixes, multi-race, things like that, or looking for win bets. As far as other things that I might bet, if I can really eliminate a race down to just three horses to where I have my one key horse. I will say that I've changed, playing in these tournaments has changed how I do handicap, because now I'm not necessarily looking just for the winner, I'm looking for the value winner. In which I know just in the last 6 months, as far as my gambling and the tournament, that I'm not having as many winners, but I'm being a lot more successful because I'm looking for spot plays that, you know, a horse that has on the turf last three starts is breaking from post 10, post 9, and then now he's been losing by 5 lengths with 5 wide trips on both, because I do a lot of trip handicapping going back using Formulator, to where you can just click on there, see the race, see how bad the trip actually was, and then the next time he drifts up to 20-1 and he has the 2-hole, and all of a sudden he has a real trip the whole way, and it's things like that I didn't really look for before until I started playing in tournaments.
That's great. A lot of players say that the tournament experience then in turn helps them become better handicappers and helps their cash play. Steve, thanks so much for joining us. I'm sure we'll see you later on down the line on the NHC Tour.
All right. Thank you very much, Pete.
So that's me and Steve Wells sitting down. That's a name I think we're going to be hearing a lot more on the NHC Tour as the year continues to go by here. Having that live event win gives him a little bit of a leg up, and we'll see if he takes advantage of that status and keeps rocketing his name up the leaderboard of the tour the way he did at Santa Anita last weekend.
And real quick, this is a piggyback. I don't know, have you read the press release on the Aqueduct contest that's coming up?
Oh, I sure have not, to break the news.
Yeah, Dan and I just talked about it. We just got off the air on DRF Live, again, 12:30 Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. We'll be on at 2 o'clock tomorrow going over all the stakes races and all other sorts of different races. But Aqueduct on Wood Memorial Day is going to be running a $400 live bankroll contest. 2 NHC seats are going to be up for grabs.
And you know why that's big news, that there's 2, is if you give away 2 seats, it qualifies for tour points.
There you have it.
So that first event they did, I don't know if people noticed, but we ran the results in the paper, and it wasn't, I mean, there were some familiar names, of course, but it wasn't all the familiar names, because a lot of people very carefully pick out their tour schedule, and a lot of people are going to be a lot more likely to show up on a day when there's 2 seats on offer. I'm hoping that's not the day of a fantasy baseball draft for me, and I'll be out there myself.
And it's a big day of racing in general.
Oh, it's
also
a great
Santa
day.
Anita Derby Day. You know, there's all sorts of things going on. So,
real question, will you be defending your title here?
Dan and I will be live all day on Saturday here.
Okay.
So I will not be – and technically I feel like my time in November when that contest comes back, if there is some sort of a contest, I'll be there. If there's not a contest, because if this is the trend for Naira where those – you know, those sort of ones.
The mythical
gone,
money might be out the window, it's
right.
looking like.
And if that kind of date is not there, then so be it. I won't be back. But I'll try to work out some contests down the road. But for the foreseeable future, we've got Dan and I are locked
it's
in
too
on
much
Saturdays.
Work to do.
Yeah, so there's no way for me to get out.
Yeah. Now, you see that in the contest world. Players, you'll see players take breaks for a while because life gets in the way, and you got to prioritize the stuff that that you're doing every day for your profession.
Although
it's a choice you made. It was a good choice, but it keeps you from participating maybe as much as you'd like to.
I will tease on both the podcast and on DRF Live. not this coming Saturday, not Spiral Saturday, not next Saturday, which is Florida Derby, UAE Derby, Louisiana Derby, not the following Saturday, Wood Memorial, Santa Anita Derby, and whatnot, but the following weekend, I will not be here for the podcast on Friday or for DRF Live on Saturday. That's Arkansas Derby weekend.
You're going down there?
I have a wedding.
Oh, you got a wedding? Okay.
So I will be out. So you guys, if Dan is in or it's just the two of you or whatever it may be.
Were your friends considerate enough to get married in Hot Springs?
These are her friends, not my friends. They're nice people. I've met them one time. But no, I will be in Northampton, Massachusetts. I'll be back close to home.
They used to have a racetrack there.
Yeah, they did. But the old Tri-County Fair. But yeah, so just that will be up to you guys to however you'd like to.
Oh, I think Dan has really established himself. He proving his Mark Loretta status. He just comes in and plays whatever position he needs
that's right.
to.
So, but that's still a little ways away. We got some time. Let's get into the public handicapper races for this weekend. There's four of them. Two at Santa Anita, I believe.
Yes,
correct.
I shouldn't just
the
say
the fourth
that.
And the eighth.
Two at Santa Anita, two at Turfway.
Yeah. All stakes.
They have it named the sandwich. So the first one is the fourth race at Santa Anita. It's the Pasadena Stakes, 2:15 Pacific, 5:15 Eastern. A mile on the grass for three-year-olds. This is going to be how we perform this weekend will determine the draft order of Wednesday's show for the three-year-olds.
I have been thinking about this fun little experiment we're going to do on Wednesday a lot, where we will draft our team. Have we made a decision if it's going to be the whole Triple Crown or just the Derby?
I think it should be, and this is just my opinion, I'd like to hear. Let's hammer it out right now, the rules.
Yeah.
I think it should be the final preps, because we're going into next weekend. Next mm-hmm. weekend start the 100-point preps.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the preps,
mm-hmm.
the Derby,
mm-hmm.
the Preakness, the Belmont.
I like it.
Okay.
I'm down with that.
That works.
Yeah.
That set of races, and I think we do it on earnings.
I'm good with that. Yep. No, because the value is sort of in the equation by the draft order, so there's no need to use odds.
Right.
I think you nailed it. I like that format a lot. Quick question for you. Would it, if we did just do it the Derby instead of that series of races, would it change? I was just occurring to me. I don't think it would change the way I draft at all.
I don't know. I don't think it would change mine either, really, because chances are many of those horses that run in the Derby, you're going to see them in at least the Preakness, but one or the other.
Right.
They're going to run in the Preakness or the Belmont, you would imagine.
Right.
The big thing is when you say the three, you could potentially, if you want to take some random stab with a new shooter that could run in the Preakness or could run in the Belmont, maybe your last round pick is Donworth. I don't know. When you take a shot with the motion horse, that whether he shows up in the Belmont or whatever it is, but
bigger teams, that would make more sense. I think with only four,
hey, that's for you. That's for you to decide, brother. That's up to you. I will let you.
Yeah.
I'm not going to show you my entire hand.
Yeah.
Still trying to win. What are the stakes?
Oh, that's another good one. What's on the line? Should we make one of us do something embarrassing, or we should go for something more?
I think there should be a winner. Instead of a loser where we embarrass the loser, there needs to be a winner that we exalt.
Right? What if we each put 20 up?
Oh, yeah, that's easy.
Yeah, well, sure.
Let's 20 ahead. It. Winner gets $40.
All right.
I could use $40.
You want more?
No.
You seem very...
No, I'm just thinking if there's anything else of value that is not cash. I mean, cash is the obvious, and cash makes the most sense, I think. But I was just racking my brain to figure out
if we can come up with some sort of trophy or something. Yeah. Maybe we can throw that into the mix. But I think that you start with the money and you work from there.
Yeah,
fair enough.
That works.
We have the groundwork, and it's teams of four.
Yeah. I think teams of four. Though thinking about it as the whole series doesn't make me think again about maybe going five, because then you could get a little creative.
Why not do five? We've been doing five the whole time. Let's do
good
five.
Point.
Let's
We've
do it.
Five.
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 Wednesday, live draft. Five teams of five.
We should stick it on the live video. It'll be such drama.
Dun, 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 dun. So we'll get into that. But this is the final week of all that kind of thing. So we'll draft teams. Whoever has the best score in PH this weekend. That's the draft order.
Right.
If we all tie, we default to what the standings are, so Pete would get the number one pick.
Right. Current standings are the tiebreaker.
But this week is how we're going to do it. So the first is the fourth at Santa. Gentlemen, which one of you would like to go? And keep in mind, I told these guys, just because of all the other things going on with live and whatnot, I'm going to give you ideas of what I think. I'm not going to marry myself to a pick yet, though.
Right.
I may throw out and say I like this one, but I'm not going to marry myself. Yet. And you guys don't have to either. If you don't
yeah. Like. Well, I mean, I famously have changed my pick several times between podcasts making pick, and in each instance, the podcast pick won, and the last minute pick was up the track. So I will reserve the right to do that. But I have some pretty fair ideas. Mike, you want to kick this one off?
Sure. Yeah, I guess I'm in last place. I get the honors, huh? So, I'm kind of with you guys. I mean, obviously, scratches will change, especially if there's a lone speed that scratches can change the complexity or someone scratches into being lone speed. But starting with the fourth at Santa Anita, you know, this is a race where I was looking at it and I thought, it's almost a shame because Bolo would just completely lay over this field now, wouldn't he?
Oh, gosh, yes.
No, he'd be 1-9.
Yeah.
I mean, he would lay over
the field. Lay over the field.
No need to be running him for 75,000.
Right.
Well, right. But the thing is, you know, I mean, he might be better ultimately on turf. And so I was kind of leaning towards a horse stretching out and trying a route of ground for the first time off of a nice maiden win. I landed on number 9, Anytime, Anyplace. Martin Pedroza for Adam Kitchingman. I'm hoping we'll be a little overlooked. A 6-1 on the morning line. Hoping to get that, maybe even a little more, because I think you've got some more well-known horses. I think the Rail Horse Bench Warrant and the 2-horse for John Sadler, Daddy DT, coming, you know, a few races back out of the Breeders' Cup turf, juvenile turf, will probably end up being the favorite. So I hope I've got a pace advantage, perhaps, and maybe able to wire this field.
I'm going with Soul Driver. You remember that trip?
I do.
You remember that trip?
When I first saw the name, I go, this is Fornatel.
Remembering the crazy wide move in the El Camino Real. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But what I really like about the horse is there's a cool form angle on him. I mean, he actually had trouble, traffic issues that didn't end up in the chart line here that shows up in your racing form, but in the Cal Derby. And then you look at the race 3 back, and you notice the form to the aforementioned Bolo. Plus, he beat Daddy DT. He has form on a couple of these others. I just think he's got a couple of excuses and is back maybe doing what he's best at anyway. So I'm gonna give it a try and hope that I'm hoping that the trip wasn't so bad that he becomes a famous international bad trip horse where everybody's so concerned with how bad the trip was that the price gets quartered and you have no value. But I'm hoping I'll get a decent price and Soul Driver will get it done for me and I can pick first in our draft.
I'm torn between two different horses, the 3 Jazzy Josh. And the reason I'm leaning against going with Jazzy Josh is because I fear that he's a need-the-lead sort, and I fear that Mike's horse, the 9, could be a need-the-lead sort, and the two of them could duel each other into submission stretching out.
Yeah.
That's my concern.
Yeah, I'm hoping that mine gets the lead because they're taking the blinkers off of Jazzy Josh. So I think that they want to try and get him to settle a little bit more, which is, I'm hoping, advantageous for me.
Right, and that's the only reason that I have a little bit of concern with that one. I'm going to go with the horse that, I don't know, some people may say he doesn't have much of a chance. I hated him in the El Camino Real Derby. I thought maybe as a bomb you could use him. I like the 6 Ernest Shackleton a little bit. I know you don't have Drayden Van Dyke, but for good reason. He's not going to be in town. He's riding elsewhere. Felipe Valdez can ride. There's no question about that. And I think I love the idea of paired up buyers. He's paired up 74s. If he moves forward off that, I think an 80 is good enough to get it done. He has the stalking gear that he can sit, let those other speeds go, get first run in the closers. I think the mile is as far as he wants to go. I think he can sit a good trip. I'm leaning toward the 6 Ernest Shackleton.
Makes sense.
The second race is the Bourbonnette Oaks. It's at Turfway Park in Kentucky. Race number 10, 5:45 Eastern. Pete, you said tough situation going on for Turfway because UK is going to be playing tomorrow, yeah?
Yeah, UK. Well, not just UK, UK Cincinnati.
Yeah.
So it's like you got two huge basketball states and Turfway. You know, this is a day where a lot of people, I think, would be making the trip up there or over there or around there. And instead, knowing folks in that part of the world as I do, they're all going to be watching basketball. Maybe Turfway can find some way to have the game all over the place and try to get people to go for the double.
I'm sure they will. Yeah. I'm sure they'll have that thing plastered everywhere because, like you say, you're in the absolute middle ground, basically.
Yeah.
I went last for the first race. I'll go first in this one mainly because I don't have a strong opinion in the slightest with this race. I think it's wide open. I don't love any of the girls. I don't think they're I don't think there's any superstars in here. I think a lot of people are going to look at Sweet Success, the 7, going out for Rusty Arnold. I mean, this horse can win. You know, you got decent company. You know, you look two back. Last of the Mohicans is a decent sort, but I didn't love that horse. Charlotte Ray, I think, is going to take a little bit more money than the 5-2 morning line. I have questions about that one, though. 2-for-2 up at Golden Gate, 2-for-2 at Los Al, 0-for-4 elsewhere. And I have a big, big concern. I talked about it a lot when we just got off DRF Live. This Turfway surface has been intensely speed favoring this meet. Intensely, which is a little bit bizarre for a synthetic surface. I don't like that fact for a couple horses in this race and in the next race we'll talk about. Coming from out of it, it bothers me a little bit. I'm going to take a shot at the 3, Don't Leave Me, off of a long, long layoff. Malcolm Pierce does well with these sorts, though. I like that latest gate drill, 48-4. She's taking money in all of her starts. I don't think I'm going to get a price here. But again, I don't have a strong opinion. I think she'll probably be close to the 5-1 line.
Yeah, she's going to get a perfect setup, but I for partially for the reasons you were just outlining, I think this is a good place to take a shot, and I'm going to take kind of a crazy shot with Walking the Kitten here, number 2.
I don't think that's crazy at all.
Oh, you like? Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a few different angles, not the least of which is Michael Maker's proficiency in moving horses from turf to synthetic. I came up with 73 wins out of 280 starters. That's 26%. With a 202 ROI over the last 5 years. When he does that and adds blinkers, as he does with Walking the Kitten, 2-for-7 with a 240 ROI, tiny sample, but still. I also, my sentimental angle on Walking the Kitten was I was a huge fan of her dam, No Deadline, who's a good horse for Chuck Simon, one of the many people in the horse racing industry who was mentored by Alan Jerkins, actually. He worked for Jerkins when he was starting out. He wanted to learn training. He figured he'd go to the best guy out there. Smart decision by Chuck. But No Deadline, many, many moons ago, anchored a pick 3 for me on, it was the first year I worked for the Saratoga Special, and it was the first day of that year that the Special did not have a deadline. So it was not a hunch pick. No Deadline made sense on form, but you had the added whammy of the horse being named No Deadline on the day with No Deadline, and you know, we walked out of there with some good money that day. And her other foal, or one of her other foals, Cannonball, was pretty good. I don't know. I'm taking a little bit of a shot here. I think she's talented enough to maybe make a splash in a race that beyond the favorites looks wide open, and I think the favorites can maybe be beaten here.
You know, I'm thinking along the same lines as you. There were a number of short-priced horses, many of whom are trying the surface for the first time, some of which are trying synthetic surfaces for the first time. So I leaned towards one that was proven at Turfway, and I'm hoping to get a little bit of a price, 15-1 on the morning line. I'm looking for let's go with our picks. I'm looking for a 1-2-3 straight try.
Okay.
I picked You're the One I Love, number 1, is 1-for-2 with a second on the Turfway surface that came sprinting. I think from a tactical standpoint, I think she can get a good trip.
Stick and kick, yep.
From the inside there. And, you know, I think she might be overlooked. I'm expecting to get at least double digits, if not close to that 15-1.
Yeah, I like the trip that she projects, and yeah, 15-1 would be another I would use in my multis for sure. You can definitely spin a yarn. Got to prove she's fast enough, but
right.
You're going to be getting compensated with price, so
yep.
Why not take a shot?
I agree with that all. I think it's just an open race.
Yeah, and I think unlike the next one, there's not a clear, I don't think there's a clear obvious winner, so it makes me more likely to take a stab.
Ooh, you think there's a clear obvious one?
Yeah,
we know who's going first.
Yeah,
we know who's going first.
The Spiral is the third race of the public handicapper event. Let's see, the time is the 6:30 Eastern. It's the 11th at Turfway. Again, mile and an eighth, main track, three-year-olds, is Derby points on the line. All right, man, you got a strong opinion. Fire
well,
away.
I got a strong opinion, but it's one that I'm not willing to take at the price that I'm likely to get. I mean, if you believe the figures, and whatever figures you want to use, if you believe the figures, Royal Sun is a layover on the field. But I think he's probably going to be 6-5, 7-5, maybe.
It's not crazy.
Odds on?
It's not crazy. He's got a figure advantage. He looks like he's going to be the speed again, but
well drawn.
But I mean, that would talk. You were mentioning, Matt, about speed biases at Turfway. No day was that more evident than that day.
And he walked out there.
Yeah.
Pronounced.
Right.
right. pronounced yeah. bias and a flow advantage. You got a trainer who has got who doesn't make or have three in here. You got to figure there's going to be some pace pressure. I'm going to try to get clever and try to beat him.
Oh, I'm trying to beat him too, but I'm just saying if you believe the figures, and granted, you know, horses that have it their own way, that's when they're likely to produce their best figures and their biggest races. So even if he regresses a little bit, if you believe that figure, he still lays over the field. That said, I do think, you know, it's worth taking a stab, even with Imperia being out of there.
Right. Imperia, is that definite? Imperia
that's
scratched?
Definite. Yeah, he's officially scratched.
Okay.
So I'm going to take a stab at someone coming out of a race we've already talked about, the El Camino Real, not the winner Metaboss, but number 9, Conquest Typhoon.
You took my pick.
Sorry. you know, boy, Mike Smith does not ride outside of California for many reasons. Usually it's only because he thinks he's got a shot to win. I think this horse could get a little overlooked between Royal Sun and Metaboss. I think he's going to take a lot of money. I think even Dubai Sky, first synthetic, is Full to Twirling Candy, who is a monster on the synth.
That's who I thought you were going to pick, who was on your Derby radar early in the year.
Right. I just think Smith rode Conquest Typhoon like he thought he was on a winner last out. He obviously didn't see Metaboss coming. I'm willing to give him another shot in his second start as a three-year-old. I think I'm hoping I'm getting a bit of a better price, certainly, than I got last out. And we'll see.
Now, before you go into yours, you said that he clearly didn't see Metaboss coming. You think that would have made a difference?
No, not at all. I don't mean he physically did not see him coming. It's I don't think he saw any horse coming. I don't think he even thought that there was a possibility he was not going to lose that race. I think he may have learned and he may ride him a little bit differently here.
Sure. I think definitely tactics are going to be different this time. My note on that race is, and we talked about it on the show, but I said, looked almost like Smith thought he had to do his own dirty work on the lead and might have cost him a little energy late. And then there's also the possibility that the horse might have just been really fresh off the bench.
Right.
So I'm thinking maybe just a classic second off the layoff with those two potential reasons to improve. Hoping you're going to get 5 or 6 to 1. Maybe that's a pipe dream. I don't know. But I was willing to give Conquest Typhoon another chance. Now, you famously in that race got done pretty dirty, Matt. You called that exact a cold, mm-hmm. and you just lost it in the last jump there. Mm-hmm. Very curious if you're going to go back to one of those two here or you have some other idea.
My heart of hearts, I don't think it's close. I think Metaboss is the best horse in this race. I'm being totally honest, but if you want to call me a homer or whatever.
You watch the tape. It's hard to pick Conquest Typhoon over Metaboss. You know what I mean?
That being said, the two, I would pick Conquest Typhoon in this race. Apparently I'm in the minority. You guys have said tactical changes. Dan thinks there's going to be a tactical change. I think they ride this horse the exact same way in this race. He came back off the bench going 9 furlongs, traveled more ground than almost anyone, hung wide up on the pace. With the way this track has been playing, you cannot come from like 4 or 5 out of it. You just can't. No one's making up any ground. I think they're going to have him sitting just off. I would imagine that you've got, whether it is Big Family, who I think is probably going to try to break Royal Sun's you-know-whats, out on the front end, really try to push him along. I think he's going to try to sit just in there. If you want to question the distance may be too far for him, I wouldn't argue with that. But I don't think – and again, we'll find out tomorrow afternoon. I could be completely wrong. I think they're going to have a very similar running style. I think he's going to be up on the engine just because coming from way out of it – and that's why I'm not picking Metaboss. I don't think he can win tomorrow. I really don't. And if he can, I think it's all systems go for the Derby. I want him to just get points because I'm really interested in him for the Kentucky Derby at this point. I think just his running style, I think the breeding is there, the whole nine – I think tomorrow he's going to have a really, really hard time. I just want him to hit the board, run in the top three.
Gotcha.
At a bomb, this is a bomb. Again, a race where I have to try to beat Royal Sun. I don't want to take the horse that I really like, Metaboss. I'm going with Watch Your Own Bobber, the 3. You look at it on paper, he's not fast enough. He's never run on a synth. He's ran on synth once. That was in his debut at Arlington. He flipped back to his left lead late last time out, but he's got tactical speed, positional speed. I don't think he needs to be outright on the lead. I think he can let those other ones to his inside go. And if he's forwardly placed enough, I think that's a positive. Second off the bench for Maker and Ramsey. Rajiv Miraj makes the trip up. It's nothing more than a way the track is playing and a positional speed. I don't think he's all that good, if I'm being totally honest. And I don't know how far he wants to go. Maybe the distance is undoing, but he's going to be forwardly placed. take a small stab with the three Watch Your Own Bobber. I think the best horse is Metaboss. I think the most likely winner.
That's a good question, actually.
The most likely winner?
Yeah.
Maybe it is Royal Sun. Mm-hmm. I just can't possibly. I can't possibly take a shot with that one. Right. I can't.
Yeah, no. I mean, and you know, these biases, things do change. I can't say he's out of it. I understand your reservations. And for the record, I agree about Conquest Typhoon. I guess when I was talking about changing tactics, I just thought it looked to me watching that again like the horse was just super keen, and Smith was worried about the leader getting away there, and he just sort of moved very aggressively early, whereas I thought he could get more of the stick and pounce. Yeah. Like sure. The trip you were describing. I think he's going to respond better to that than having to make that early move and do the dirty work like he had to do last time. Yeah. He's not really a speed.
Fair.
The sense I got in the El Camino Real is Smith thought he had to win the race on the back stretch. He thought he had to take the lead on the back stretch and get to the turn first. And, you know, I don't know if that, obviously in retrospect, that was not the right move.
The horse being fresh didn't help matters
at all.
Right. And going nine.
Yeah, so often that affect people, you know, the people out there. They know who they are, who are so quick to criticize jockeys a lot of the time. You have to give credit to the fact that the horse has a say in the matter, mm-hmm. and if the horse is being a knucklehead, mm-hmm. you know, what are you going to do? Strangle him back to last? Like, that's not going to work.
Right.
So you know, I never mind seeing riders make errors of aggression. It's just that's how I look at the game.
The fourth and final PH race is the eighth from Santa Anita post time, 7 Eastern, 4 Pacific. It's the Grade 2 San Luis Rey going 1.5 miles on the grass. Anybody have a strong opinion?
Oh yeah, very strong opinion.
Fire.
Ain't nobody beating Finnegan's Wake.
Okay.
I mean, wow. Not just because I'm a big James Joyce fan. This horse has won me over.
Really?
I mean, at least running against the group that he's running against. I'm not saying I'm going to bet him against some European later in the summer.
Sure.
But I just don't. I mean. That's where, I mean, I'm going to probably single in the pick four or do maybe 80, 90% of my tickets through and have a small backup. Because you can make cases for a couple others, but I just think this is the old go with the best, fastest horse and don't make your head hurt.
Mike?
It's funny. I see this race similar to the way I see the Spiral, which is I think Finnegan's Wake is your clear likely winner, also probably your likely odds-on favorite.
Definitely.
And I was willing to take a stab to beat him. There's a lot of speed in here, I got to notice.
Playing right into Finnegan's Wake's hands.
Tentatively.
Biancone's coming out and he's wavering. They may scratch Diamond Bachelor.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
But if that happens,
Joe's Blazing Aaron's loose.
I might think about Joe's Blazing Aaron a little bit.
If they scratch,
I might potentially. But I think Ashley Loves Sugar is not going to let him get too far away. There's more speed certainly in this race lined up than there was the last time Finnegan's Wake raced. I'm taking a stab. This is a classic case of not just handicapping the race, but also handicapping the odds. And I do not believe that, assuming Diamond Bachelor goes, I do not believe we are going to have four horses between 4-1 and 6-1. I just don't think that's going to happen. I think there's going to be a clear second choice. I think it's probably going to be Powerfoot. And so then from there, it's really just looking for value. And I could find myself being enticed by taking a stab at an improving horse who's well-bred, like number two, Play Hard to Get, who similar running style to Finnegan's Wake, may relish going longer, and I'm hoping would get a better price than the 6-1 morning line.
This one layup for me. I'm going with the outside horse, Ashley Loves Sugar. Not going to, like you said, Mike, not going to let any of the horses, the front runners, get too far away, but he's going to get the jump of Finnegan's Wake. There's something about it. I said it on DRF Live. Unfair, whatever it is. I just don't like the horse. I don't like Finnegan's Wake. Never have, never will. He does nothing but win. He's razor sharp right now.
I was going to say, how's that working out for you?
He's firing big numbers, and I think it's more an indictment on the horses in general in Southern California going long on grass than this horse himself, because he's the leader of, in my opinion, a bad group.
Yeah, I mean, for me, Ashley Loves Sugar, another one of the female names in the male horse to throw us off with the gender. But that would be the one, if I talked about, you know, 10 to 20% of pick fours going through another, that would be the one. The breeding could get 12, got a nice form boost with as good as Talco looked when I was out there.
Another runner who finished farther back in that last race. Talco came back to win. Another horse a little farther back in that same race also came back to win next out with the same buyer, 91.
Yeah, so definitely a little interesting. I just, you know, I'm going to be happy if I'll be pulling for the favorite there, but I won't be knocked out of everything if Ashley wins.
Those are the four PH races. Real quick, Sunland Derby, is it a walkover or what?
Yes.
I haven't even looked at it.
I'll put it this way. If it's not a walkover, there is no way. Well, okay, if Firing Line somehow does not win, there is no way I would even consider playing that horse in any of the Triple Crown races.
No, I mean, that seems pretty
It looks that obvious.
Oh, yeah.
He's going to be 2-5.
Yeah, if that.
Any wise guy ideas, or just is it a pass all?
It's going to be a pass. I think the four-horse Y2 is probably going to round out your exact. A lot of people like Tisnell R. James are going to pitch him out.
Since we have a minute, you know, not much more, but NCAA update? How we look from those tips the other day?
So last night was the first part of that two-team parlay. And I said it on live, and Andrew was laughing when we were talking about it. It's dead. It's over. They lost. Eastern Washington did. But, and hey, it is what it is. This is just how the game goes. I mean, you've got a team like Eastern Washington, who's a much smaller team. They're coming from a smaller conference. They're a bunch of sharpshooters on the outside. And you go up against a team like Georgetown, who they can still play. They can shoot the ball. But they have the major height advantage on you. And as far as physicality is concerned, when you get into a physical game, Eastern Washington has no chance. So toward the three-quarter mark in the first half, around 5-6 minutes, Eastern Washington is up 27-26. It's been a back-and-forth game. Everyone's hitting shots. There's a traveling call against the kid on Eastern Washington, one of the guards, and it was a clear travel, no big deal. But the kid on Georgetown, number 5, I believe, 55, he was their small forward, he bumped him and then punched him in the chest.
What?
So they go over and they review it. So now it's a matter of, is it a flagrant one or a flagrant two? I don't think you're going to give him a flagrant two. You're not going to toss the kid out of the game. It's the NCAA tournament.
I'm throwing a punch.
They don't even give him a flagrant one. They just continue on. And literally that was the moment when the momentum changed. They went on an 18-2 run. They essentially just started – they bullied him around. And at that point, I knew I was dead. It got to as much as, I think, 25 or 26. The final ended up being 10. So if you were playing the number was 8. So you were sweating that out right to the very end. But I played him straight away. I don't know what's going on. Buffalo hasn't kicked off yet.
I was
going to
say, you did double or nothing instead of the parlay?
I mean, again, I don't play sports very often. Okay. This one, of the value, I was getting 10-1. I looked at it and said, I think both of these teams have real chances of winning. We're going to roll with it. Hey, you win some, you lose some. But there's no question. Maybe they wouldn't have won to begin with. But when you turned it into a Big East game rather than whatever conference they were coming out of, you know, your odds aren't very good.
No, that's tricky. Very tricky.
Dead. But yesterday, a tremendous first day of the tournament. And I can only hope that today is half as good, because yesterday you had all sorts of absolutely fantastic finishes.
It's always amazing. And it's you know, my thought on these days is it just the hypocrisy of the sports world on display. How popular do you think this thing would be with people if everybody didn't have a little action in the form of an office pool or whatever? And what exactly, from an ethical point of view, is different between an office pool and putting a couple of dollars through the windows? It really makes no sense.
Nothing at all. It's a matter of, once the leagues can fully make some sort of a profit on it, it's going to be legal. I don't think there's any question.
Well, we're
about
hearing
it
now from, you know, Manfred and from Silver. They seem to get it. They're changing the conversation in the right way.
So that's dead. But boy, the tournament trudges on, and I love it, man. Like, these 4 days for me are right there with four of the better sports days of the year. It's these four, the first two rounds of the tournament, first two real rounds of the tournament. I don't count the playing games. It's garbage. The weekend at the Masters, Saturday, and more reasonably Sunday, the Derby, obviously, Breeders' Cup weekend. Travers weekend for me is always going to be a big deal. But these are those sort of weekends that just, like, you know, even U.S. Open weekend, I'm a big golf guy, so, like, all the majors, the four majors. But, yeah, I mean, These are big sports.
It's fans. Amazing. I don't have the bandwidth to follow it at this point. Like, I'm just doing too much racing stuff and have other. And it's also, like, huge fantasy baseball prep time and baseball handicapping time for me, getting ready for the year. So I don't. And if I've gotten to the point with the NCAAs where if I'm not going to do the work and do it proper, I kind of just. It's just, you know, it's on the background. It's fun to watch the finishes. But I absolutely acknowledge what you're saying. Like, if I had the time to devote to really, like, breaking down these games and having a little bit of fun, whether it be in pools or straight, it's great sport.
No, it really is. It's a good time, and it's really just, you know, that's the other thing, too, with the pros. You see these kids at the very end of games. I was listening to one of the ESPN radio shows that I listened to on the podcast coming in, and they said it. They were talking about the Northeastern Notre Dame finish, which was the first game of the tournament yesterday. And Northeastern had a chance at winning at the buzzer, and they didn't get a shot off. And it really looked like the moment was too big for them. And that's not a negative. It is what it is.
Maybe
you get to a point and you say, oh, my God, we have a chance.
Yeah.
Not like we're playing, but we fade down the lane. You know, they were there. They were there, and maybe just the moment was a little bit too big. But anyway, we digress a little bit. Anything else going into the weekend we don't want to talk about? A
little housekeeping. I want to suggest, so Mike doesn't have to toot his own horn, I just want to suggest that people check out his latest Saturday-specific Bet This, Not That. He's got some good stuff in there. It's definitely worth checking out. Also want to encourage people, not just on Saturday, but Wednesday through Saturday, checking out the awesome work that Matt and Dan have been doing on DRF Live. Go on there. It's a great second screen experience on the weekends, and there's lots of good content during the week as well, breaking down the previous weekend, talking about some other issues, not entirely unlike some of the stuff we get into around here, but in a little more of a formal way, and with video, which is kind of cool. And now, is that stuff archived as well? Like, for folks who aren't watching it live, can they go look at it later, Matt?
They're cutting out certain pieces of it that are on demand, so you can go on
that's
and
great.
Check those out.
Yeah, so. That's really cool. So people can have the option to do that as well. You know, as always, lots of cool stuff at drf.com to check out, and, you know, feel free to reach out to us on Twitter. I'm at Looms Boldly. Guy to my right is at Bernier_Matt. Guy across the room at DRF Formulator. Always happy to take questions, interact with the fans. We're here to help and represent Team DRF out there in the social media world.
One last thing from me. Jay Priven just put on DRF Live. Lord Nelson, he was supposed to run in the Sunland Derby. They scratched him. He's going to remain around one turn. He's going to come this way. He's going to run in the Bay Shore.
Sensible.
And then he's going to run possibly in the Pat Day, the one-turn mile at Churchill
Downs. The race formerly known, yeah.
As the Derby Trial. Yeah. I think he could be a monster going one-turn mile.
I would agree.
Seems like what he
smart.
Wants to do.
Yeah.
So, Mike, anything?
No. As Pete mentioned, I got to bet this, not that, for tomorrow's races. I got some fun ones in there. So
very good.
I'll tweet it out.
Mr. Fornitel, take it away.
May you win all your photos.